Good morning. Welcome to chapel this morning. I'm John Dull, the director of the Wind Ensemble, and that ensemble is who we have before us this morning. We're going to open chapel this morning with a piece entitled Parable by Elliot Del Borgo.
Thank you. We thank the Wind Ensemble for their contribution to the chapel series on parables. We also are pleased today to welcome students who have been living and learning in Washington, D.C. with the Washington Community Scholars Center program, bringing reflections from this experience. It'll take as quickly as possible. We'll get into that part of the program. Welcome today to members of the EMU Board of Trustees, and any other visitors, people supporting these students and the Wind Ensemble. It's good to have you with us today.
Good morning, EMU. We are the Fall of 2014 group currently in the Washington Community Scholar Center. I'm here to share the success we had this semester. Before this program, we were complete strangers, but quickly bonded early in the experience. This is a quick introduction of who we are. This is Kayla. She is Gerla, the diva, the girl with the voluptuous hair at the house.
And this is Brian. He is the loud one in the house, the shopping addict, and constant whistler to endless songs around the house.
Introducing the girl all the way from Tanzania, AKA the koala of the house, because a good portion of her day is spent sleeping, she is Brenda. An interesting fact about Brenda is that she just found out that the emergency number in the America is 911, not 119. Therefore, when you see her on campus, make sure that you help her distinguish between the two.
Next is Maria. She is the peacemaker of the house, but don't get it twisted. You'll find her tearing the dance floor up on salsa night in DuPont Circle.
Known as the Betty Crocker of the house for her amazing baked pastries, like her pumpkin spice cookies and her delicious granola, she is Amanda. Amanda made her musical debut in the kitchen of the house this semester.
In the beginning of the semester, we couldn't tell whether she lived in the house with us or not because she spent all of her days in bed watching movies on Netflix. She is Rachel. Rachel is our own personal photographer, whether we're dancing recklessly around the house or posing like we're on the cover of Vogue. Next, you might catch him walking down to the kitchen to get his cookies at 2 o'clock in the morning, or stealing food that's meant for the whole house and hide it in his room. He is RJ. RJ is the late night owl of the house. You'll find him taking showers at 2 o'clock in the morning. Next is Bradley. He cooks most of the meals in our house, and he's also known as the chef slash dad of the house. Brad is a big kid at heart, shown off by his purchase of a marshmallow gun he uses to randomly attack us all.
This girl is the tough chick of the group, fitting for her internship with the Metropolitan Police Department. She is Ashley. Fun fact about Ashley is that she was a quarterback for a Little League football team.
Now, we are going to share a verse that we were given that depicts our experience in the city. The verse is Jeremiah 29:7. Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare.
We are sent as foreigners into this beautiful city with nothing but each other. Our duty is to find ourselves throughout the process of being out of our comfort zone in a different environment and that we are accustomed to. Thank you for being here, and I hope you enjoy your presentation.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm from a small town in Ohio where everyone seemed to know everyone and everything, and the biggest gatherings of people would be at a local county fair. It would not be out of the ordinary to see someone wearing cowboy boots and flannel, seeing a large cloud of exhaust from a diesel truck, or being surrounded by cornfields. That was the type of area I grew up in. Moving to the city through the WCSC program was definitely going to be a big change and rather intimidating, so I thought. Being there for just a few hours, I learned there was nothing to be intimidated by at all. Sure, the city turned those cornfields to big buildings, boots turned to nicely polished shoes, the flannel turned into tailored suits and ties, trucks turned into luxury sports cars, taxis, or the metro, and the people knew absolutely nothing about me. The idea of fast-walking people on the sidewalks of D.C. being so money-focused and rude needs thrown out the door. Sure, you occasionally get that unfriendly Grinch, but most of the time, they're actually super friendly. Most of the people are willing to give you directions or give you good recommendations of where to eat. Some of the best conversations or learning experiences I have been with random people that I have met waiting for the metro or to cross the street. That is also the case when it comes to my internship with the Narcotic Special Investigation Division Major Case Unit of the Metropolitan Police Department. Who better to teach you about the crime in D.C. than the criminals themselves or the history of the city than the people who live there for quite some time? They are the ones that are there and experience different things you're going through every day in their everyday lives. The best advice I can give going into a situation like this is to remain open-minded, observe, and listen. Push yourself to get out of your comfort zone. Force yourself to grow.
Hi, I'm Rachel. My experience in the city was a little bit different than Ashley's. It's definitely been a challenge adjusting to city life coming from a small town called Churchville in the country. City life is so fast-paced and loud. I still haven't got used to hearing planes and helicopters and sirens literally every 5 minutes. Where I'm from, it's quiet. Even living across the street from the firehouse in Churchville, I've never heard as many sirens as I do as when I'm in D.C. The pace has been a challenge because it's totally different in D.C. where everyone seems to be in a hurry and always rushing to get things done. I think it's great that people can hurry through things and be productive, but me personally, I don't work well when I'm rushed. Even though it's so fast-paced, most people are friendly and say good morning when you walk past them, kind of like where I'm from, where everyone knows everyone. Overall, it's been a learning experience in so many areas. Adjusting to city life, adjusting to the pace and noise, and just the overall feeling of the environment.
My name is Brad Mathias, and I'm a Peacebuilding Development and Sociology double major. And I'll be sharing what living and working on the Capitol means to me. Living and working on the Capitol does not just mean hundreds of attractions, and display American history from its beginning, or being a part of a city that is known as a transitional period for millions of young individuals fresh out of college. Living and working on the Capitol meant something completely different to me this semester. I had the opportunity to work for the Federal Police Agency. I worked for the United States Mint Police, which is a branch of the Department of Treasury. This was a great opportunity for me since I have a long-term passion and career, and pursuing a career in the FBI. This internship first opened doors for me to the federal government, and also, more importantly, led me to experience this divide between the government and everyday society. For years, I have listened to the stories and learned in class about how the government has this wall up and isolates themselves from the surrounding communities. This internship really opened up my eyes, opened up the reasoning behind all these accusations that I have learned, and I have learned that not all these accusations are true. Yes, the government does not need certain issues, does not need to keep certain issues and information in secrecy. But that is not to further. Yes, the government does need to keep certain issues and information in secrecy, but that is not to further separate the government from the community. It is done in order to ensure the security of citizens in their daily lives. What the public is not completely aware of is that a lot of federal agencies engage in organized events that provide services for the community. For example, my internship is actively involved in food drives for the homeless and families in need. Also, when the Mint has commemorative coin sales, a lot of people who are involved in the production come out and engage with thousands of coin hobbyists that show up. The last service that not only my internship offers, but most federal agencies offer, is job opportunities to veterans. A lot of veterans that come back from serving their country and are out of a job, but the federal agencies will quickly offer jobs out to these veterans. With majoring in peacebuilding and development, it made me look at law enforcement field in a different perspective than a major in criminal justice would. Society leans on a traditional retributive justice system like a crutch, believing that this is the only way that's to solve the world's problems. I have experienced this from talking with police officers in the past and listened to conversations of the officers from my internship. Experiencing different methods of conflict transformation and restorative justice methods have led me to believe that there are other ways to solve our issues in the justice system. Not in all cases can peace building or restorative justice methods work, but there is this fine line that can mean the difference in someone's life through rehabilitation or sending them straight to prison because it's easier. Methods like restorative justice is possible to incorporate into law enforcement agencies at all levels, city, state, and federal, some more than others. It comes down to the people wanting to make a change, which is extremely hard in this world we live in. This internship has really brought my experiences of living and working on the Capitol to a micro level with what the federal government actually offers to the community. There are hundreds of accusations of what people think the federal government does. Some of them may be true, but one cannot decide which accusations are true or false until they experience behind the scenes firsthand.
Good morning. Hi. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Amanda Bartle. I'm a junior studying history at Bluffton, and I'm from Iowa City, Iowa. I graduated from Iowa Mennonite School in 2012, so if you're trying to place me, there you go. We can play the Mennonite game later. I am the collections management intern at the Smithsonian Anacostia Community Museum, and to answer the number one question I get, no, it's not like night at the museum. I think that my favorite part about DC is that it is known as the museum capital of the country. I like museums, if you haven't figured that one out. Not only does DC have 18 of the 20 Smithsonian museums, there are also countless others, ranging from the US Holocaust Museum to the Frederick Douglass House to the Crime and Punishment Museum. Most of these museums are free, but those that you have to pay for provide an experience that are well worth it. The National Mall gives you an opportunity to walk through significant historic landmarks. The Lincoln Memorial brings to mind Forrest Gump, but also Marian Anderson, the African-American opera singer who established the memorial as a significant place for the civil rights movement 30 years before Martin Luther King Jr. On the other side of the mall is Capitol Hill, which has obviously the Capitol, but also the Supreme Court and the Library of Congress, where you can see the Reading Room, made famous by National Treasure Book of Secrets, and Thomas Jefferson's library, which is currently on display. Walking along the mall, you will pass many of the Smithsonian museums, as well as the National Archives, where such documents as the Declaration of Independence are stored, also made famous by National Treasure. So thanks, Nick Cage. seminar, Kim's class, takes you into the less conspicuous parts of DC history. And I mean into it. Almost every week we go on some kind of walking tour that focuses on a different part of DC social history. One week it was the murals of the Depression, the next was the African-American history of Georgetown. Now be warned, these walking tours are not for the faint of heart. While they are rewarding and educational, for, say, the Georgetown tour, be prepared to walk for 6 miles up and down hills behind a woman with some sort of turbo propellers attached to her. We are often rewarded with some sort of treat at the end. These can range from a cupcake at Sweet Lobby or an authentic Greek meal at Zarbo's Cafe, complete with baklava. We're highly motivated by food. It's been a little strange for me moving to DC. Remember, I'm from Iowa, and who remembers what kind of historic things happened in Iowa? Yeah, I don't. My high school history teacher would be appalled. But 2.5 years ago, I was sitting in a classroom in a school surrounded by cornfields, and today I'm interning at a Smithsonian. Today I am so used to walking past such historically significant things as the Capitol and the Washington Monument on my daily commute, and I barely give those a second glance. My opportunities at WCSC have broadened my horizons, and I will always be grateful for them.
Hi guys, I'm RJ. Living in the District of Columbia with a house full of strangers has been a great experience. I call the experience the real world WCSC because it feels like that TV show with a bunch of strangers that go on a journey and build a connection with one another. When we first started at the program, a lot of us were homesick and a lot of us stayed in our house, in our rooms. We didn't know each other. For one, that was the reason why we stayed there. But that all changed when we found ourselves in the kitchen looking for food. The kitchen slash living room is where all the interactions happen. Friendly debates, jokes, meetings, cooking, and everything in between. We eat a lot of food, and everyone participates when it comes to cooking. We are given a certain amount of money throughout the week to buy groceries and to prep food for our roommates. Brad, our head chef, usually makes half the dishes just because he likes to cook and some of us come home late. Kayla and Brian are this dynamic duo in the kitchen. Maria makes the veggies, Amanda makes our sweets, Rachel has that southern style cooking, and Brenda, well, we don't let her touch anything except for the microwave. Except when she makes her chili, it's finger licking good. Well, me, I do it all. I make breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My specialties are cinnamon stuffed pancakes. I've been thinking about making a restaurant and putting IHOP out of business. Once dinner is made, we sit down and eat together like family and just talk about our days and what has happened in our lives. We have at least one family dinner once a week just to check up on everyone and make sure everyone is doing fine.
My name is Brenda Soka, and I'm a junior majoring in peacebuilding and development with a minor in economics. This fall, I interned at 3 related organizations. For my internship, my main focus is doing research and advocacy for women. At the Torture Abolition and Survivor Support Coalition, I'm focusing on women, torture survivors, and also doing a bit of advocacy for a petition that will allow detained immigrants to get free legal counsel. At the National Religious Campaign Against Torture, I'm doing research on women in solitary confinement, and I'm currently creating a slideshow presentation to use at interfaith meetings. At the Mary Knoll Office of Global Concerns, I'm doing some research on sexual violence as a weapon of war, focusing on genocides and conflicts in Africa. Through my internship, I have witnessed some advocacy and campaigns for international problems, such as genocide problems. I attended a symposium on women and genocide in the 21st century. This symposium was really intriguing and eye-opening. The panel consisted of notable activists in the genocide field, as well as scholars, journalists, Darfur survivors, and distinguished guests such as the chief persecutor of the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda, At the symposium, I learned about the longest genocide in history, which is happening in Darfur, 11 years of genocide, and the genocide which America has refused to recognize, which is happening in Burma. I learned about the different international responses to stop and monitor genocide. I enjoyed this experience because I got to listen and understand the thought process and different variables that come into play when agencies like the UN are creating peacekeeping mandates and treaties. My internship enabled me to understand and get a firsthand experience on putting peacebuilding theories I learned at EMU into practice. I was able to learn about the different variables and circumstances which makes peacebuilding unsuccessful in different countries around the world. This was beneficial for me because I got a more realistic understanding of peacebuilding. Most importantly, my internship gave me a broad overview of the different peacebuilding fields that I could possibly work for in the future. Before my internship, I was not quite sure what type of work I wanted to do after I graduate. But I think this fall internship showed me different peacebuilding career paths that will suit me.
My name is Maria Driediger, and I'll graduate in December with a degree in peacebuilding and development. So as you've heard so far, the city of DC is full of exciting experiences, organizations, people, and things to do. There is a life, vibrancy, and diversity to it that I fell in love with. But there's also a lot of pain, especially poignant in the homelessness and poverty occurring in our nation's capital. This semester, I've seen this poverty firsthand through working in a Women's Day Center through an organization called N Street Village that serves homeless and low-income women in DC. Sleeping on the streets, substance abuse, sexual abuse, racism, mental illness, these are daily obstacles in these women's lives. At first, I felt like I was in over my head, overwhelmed, not sure what to say or how to be in that space. In all honesty, there were times that I wanted to leave and be anywhere but there, because that was an easier option than dealing with women who were difficult, not only in their behavior, but the gravity of their life situations. I realized that in university, I've learned a lot about the theories behind poverty, but not the reality of it. And yet, what will always stick out to me was the deeply personal environment in which I worked. My job consisted of many things, from running a job search on the internet, getting the women the supplies they needed, doing intake for housing, enforcing community rules, and just sitting, talking, and eating with the women. I was not sheltered from the brutal reality of these women's lives, for better and for worse, and I felt very much placed within this city, not only seeing poverty, but gaining a whole new understanding and respect for its complexity and the humans who carry its burden. I've been privileged to know and be known by the resilient women of N Street and to work with an organization that values the inherent dignity and value of each woman that it serves, rooted in a belief of the healing effects that come from belonging
Hello,
somewhere.
My name is Emily.
My supervisor always said, there's good in the worst of us and bad in the best of us. And this semester I've been challenged to expand my understandings of people and of myself. All that to say, I think that this is what the verse from Jeremiah has been talking about. The women of N Street have deeply touched my life and changed how I view the world. It's been hard, but it's been worth it. And after all that I've seen, I can't do anything else but be in this field, not just because I want to serve others, but for how much I grow and learn when I'm in contexts that I'm not comfortable or with people like me. Even though it exposes my fears and flaws more than I'd like, it just makes me feel like more of a whole human at the end of the day. When we invest in others, we inadvertently invest in ourselves. My own welfare is ultimately connected to the welfare of others in ways that I don't necessarily understand, but there is something inside me that rings true when I feel it, where I feel at home in a city that was once foreign, but is now familiar. Please feel free to join us in Common Grounds after chapel if you have any questions or would like to hear more about the program. I think we'll be there until about 12. So thank you all for coming.